got to have Friday off of work and got to go watch the Chattanooga Red Wolves practice. Was a lot of fun. I've got some awesome interviews we're going to post in this show. And then I thought to myself, hey, you know what would be awesome? Let's scoop up my son right before he gets off of school, and we can kind of beat Atlanta traffic and get down to spend a weekend in Charleston. And that was a mistake. So I have...
I think the only way to beat Atlanta traffic is to be there at 3 a.m., is my understanding.
Yes. Yes, the only time is to try to get there at 3 a.m. Otherwise, you have to jab a pen into your leg to remind yourself how to feel. And so I just spent a good part of Friday evening rolling through Atlanta traffic as the Job Bluth, I've made a huge mistake meme.
That's kind of the thing, like when the Braves moved to Gwinnett and they tried to spin it as, well, we were trying to get closer to our fans, and everyone kind of laughed it off because really it was about getting all that property, right, so that they could build all that stuff around the stadium. But the truth of it, though, is if you ever tried to go down to like a Braves game that started at like 7 o'clock on a Friday, you would have to leave Chattanooga at 2:30 or 3 to make sure you were there. So, no, I don't envy the fact that you were in Atlanta traffic for all day Friday. I feel like, though, that was better than what I was doing on Saturday, where I was just basically wandering the woods on my own while everybody else finished the 5K that the Red Wolves had. So,
did you just stop and come home? Or did you?
It was really funny. Like, so I have a messed up knee and I'm massively overweight. So it's not a best combination to be running a 5K. But like, you know, the athlete in me that ran half marathons just 2 years ago was like, oh, this won't be a big deal. I only jogged maybe like a half mile of it. So the rest of it was just walking. And it was after like torrential downpours. So there was mud everywhere and the trails were basically, you were just trying to avoid mud piles. But there was definitely a point where like I looked behind me and there was no one, and I looked in front of me and like the only person I saw was another person about my size that was definitely distancing themselves from me. It was quite amusing. I was like, wow, this is sad. And then like I looked at my watch. I was like, okay, the fun run that was supposed to start like an hour after we started, there's a good chance that I'm going to be finishing when all the kids are running towards me. So like that motivated me to run. I literally finished like 5 minutes before. It took me almost an hour to do 3 miles. It was pretty pathetic.
But. Nice. Well, I hear that the winner did it in about 20 minutes. And I feel like if you put me on an ATV, I couldn't do a 5K in 20 minutes.
It was up. It was uphill for at least half of it. It was not like, it was, you know, through the woods. So it wasn't your traditional like run through the streets. It was, you know, through the woods there where the wolves like to roam in theory. And so you went uphill for a good bit. And then what killed me, because I have that bad knee, was going downhill. Like the uphill wasn't that bad. It was like trying to stop myself from going too fast. And then putting that pressure every single time I planted on my knee was just not fun.
Yeah, that sounds rough.
But yeah, when like, I like got to a point where there's like a couple of the Red Wolves like interns are there. The two Red Wolves interns are like start cheering. I'm like, whoa, you want to wait? You're gonna have to be cheering for way too long if you start now. And they stopped, which was pretty funny.
No, in many situations that would encourage people to pick up their pace, but you were just happy that there was actual civilization around you finally.
When I started hearing the noise of like the music that was coming that they had been playing, I guess the whole time that we were gone, I was like, oh, I'm getting closer. The end is near. So, yeah. Add that to my list of really bad decisions, to say the least.
Well, so. You know, at least the wolves got saved.
Yeah.
Did they? So they called it Running with the Wolves. Did they let the wolves out to chase everyone, kind of like Running with the Bulls in Pamplona?
If they had, I don't think I'd be here, because I'm pretty sure they go after the weakest, right?
That's a good point. Yeah, you are definitely the old and sick on the edge of the herd.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. Like there was definitely a guy who came up and they were talking to me, and it's like his daughter was there, who's in third grade, and I was like, oh, what's the? She goes, this is my third 5K. I was like, oh, really? What's your normal time? He goes, well, I average a little over 7 minutes a mile. I was like, I don't think at any point in my life I've averaged that, but thanks.
Soccer chat with two T's, because we're going to chat about soccer, but we're also in Chattanooga. So it's like a play on words. And, you know, Chattanooga is a soccer city.
All right. Welcome to the first official episode of Soccer Chat. We're excited to announce that we are going to be part of the Beautiful Game Network, or BGN.fm, if you're looking online for it. It's very exciting. It's a group of podcasters across the country that focus mainly on lower division soccer, but there's also a few that are MLS and Premier League focused. So if you get a chance, check us out there. We're really excited about that. And we're honestly really excited about the quality that we're going to be bringing this very first episode. Alex had a chance to go out and interview a couple players and our coach. And we're really excited to get to share that with you here in just a moment. Alex, you want to tell us a little bit about how that opportunity came about and as such?
One thing that people should keep in mind is Coach Tim Hankinson he has open practices. Any weekday that you are available, and actually really on Saturdays too, when they're not playing games, they're going to be practicing. They are at CCS on campus somewhere. Sometimes they're on the turf field. Sometimes they go over to the practice field that is grass that allows them to, you know, take it a little easier on their legs while they're warming up. And they are perfectly happy for you to go sit in the stands and watch how they organize a practice and run stuff.
That's really cool.
You know, and being the friendliest front office in the world, we talked to them about Soccer Chat and what we want to do with the show and how we want to build excitement for the team. So they were more than happy to work with me on getting a couple of people to come to the side after practice was over. And so we got the interviews. It was a really exciting chance to talk about the exhibition game they played on Wednesday in Birmingham against Birmingham Legion. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of details that have come out about the match. There's not going to be any kind of lost footage or anything. Apparently, the game wasn't taped. It was a closed scrimmage, so there weren't a lot of spectators there to watch the match. Chattanooga Red Wolves, you could tell talking to the team, they were a little disappointed. They came out early and gave up a couple of bad chances, got behind. In the second half, they were able to battle back. Eamon Zayed scored a goal, made it 2-1. They had a couple of further chances to try and tie the match, and they ended up giving up a third goal, and so they lost. So you'll get a lot of perspective from the players on that match. You know, they were really excited to finally get out as a team and really get a good run. But they really feel like they have a lot of work that they have left to do with the week and a half that they've been practicing now, getting ready for the game coming up against Atlanta United.
Did you see how they were announcing the scores on Twitter? Did you catch that?
I found myself very confused about what the score was. The first one that I saw, I was very excited, and then I read it closer and realized that it was the wrong direction.
Yeah, I think that their thought wasn't bad, where they were trying to do it in the order of similar to home and away. But very rarely, when you're talking about Twitter scores that are being updated, does anyone do it in that manner. You're doing it, if you're the Red Wolves, you're tweeting your score first, typically. And if you're playing against Birmingham and they were tweeting theirs, they would tweet theirs first. So if you would have thought that it would have come out 0-2, because that was the first announcements they did, unless Birmingham was doing it, then they would have marked it as 2-0. So the fact that they marked 2-0, I did the same thing. I was like, whoa, we're beating Birmingham 2-0? We started our training a lot later than they did. That's a great sign. And then I read further, and I was like, oh, wait, we just scored our first goal and it's 2-1, and I read that wrong. So, yeah, hopefully that changes. And hopefully if they do another close, which I don't think they are, from what I understand, there's going to be some more other than just this Atlanta United that they're going to be announcing in the near future, games that are actually going to be open to the public. And so I'm really excited about that. But if they do another close, I really hope they change that up and start doing it with our score first and make it a little bit clearer for trying to follow along through social media and such. All right. Well, if you want to go ahead, we'll go ahead and jump into these interviews. You want to kind of tee up what we're going to be listening to here, who you got a chance to interview and such. We, you know, we know about the coach, but who are the two players?
So I had the opportunity to talk with Coach Tim Hankinson. You'll hear a lot of good stuff from him. We also talked with Richard Dixon, who had the assist on the goal, defender for them. And then we talked with the goal scorer, The original goal scorer in Chattanooga Red Wolves history, Amon Zayed. He had a lot of really good stuff to say in this interview. I appreciated it.
Awesome. Well, here we go.
I'm here with head coach Tim Hankinson. Coach, on Wednesday it was unfortunate we didn't get the win, but what did you learn from the team in that first time scrimmaging?
Well, I think it showed that, you know, in a first scrimmage like that, first time we've run the full field against a team that this was their third full game, is that they were more, you know, match ready, both in a fitness standpoint, you know, their ability to move the ball around and use the big surface. That they were stronger in, and unfortunately we made a couple of mistakes at the back with balls that dropped over the top, and those are things that really experienced players should be able to read and do a better job with.
Okay, we have a you know, pretty tough preseason schedule, playing three matches against USL championship teams. It's going to be a good test. It'd be great to get wins, but they may be hard to come by. What do you want to see to be able to call this preseason a success?
Well, it's not so much in the results. It's we work on concepts, you know, like when we lose a ball, what is our reaction to defending? About our pressing game, about our possession game, how are we going to break down opponents' back fours and create enough shooting opportunities to get the goals that we need? So it's more, I look at it, there we had some victories in the match because there are some things we did very well. But there are also things that showed us what we need to be working on. And so that's what the preseason is about, is improving your concepts of play. And when you have enough concepts that are working in a positive way, then that's going to end up adding up to victories down the road.
Was there a particular player Wednesday that stood out to you in their performance?
Not entirely. I mean, I think every player had moments that were very good, but they were not complete performances. I mean, again, I think if you were to focus on one issue, if you were to crystallize what would be one thing, it's clearly the football fitness. You know, it's our ability to keep our legs in the game. You know, when a defender doesn't feel he's got legs, instead of tracking the runner, you know, he'll start raising his hand looking for a linesman to make a call. So those are issues all over the field. You know, when you first principles of defense is you lose a ball, immediate chase. You know, and there were times that we weren't chasing immediately, and that allows the opponent to have a chance to play out of that situation. So I think our fitness in general has got to greatly improve. And you know, we've talked to the team about it. They realize it. You know, they were the ones that were fatigued at you know, partway through the game, and so I think clearly they're willing to work at it, and we'll get there.
So everyone's excited about getting the home debut this Saturday against Atlanta United 2. Would fans be expecting major changes to the lineup that went out Wednesday, or is it going to be small tweaks?
I think you're looking at small things. We have to, you know, every time you put a group out, you've got to give them a bit of a run, unless something is very, very problematic. But I think, you know, these guys are just getting to know how to play together. You know, we had a session, and one of our players got the names of his teammates confused. So we're still in the early stages. So I don't see major changes. We just want to do some of the things better and with a similar group.
I'm sure all of the U8 coaches out there can appreciate getting the names mixed up during the middle of the game.
Right. Well, we have two that are pretty close. One is Cito and one is Soto. And one of our players got them confused, and again, everyone's new to each other, and those things work themselves out the more time you spend on the field together.
Excellent. What's been your favorite part about being in Chattanooga so far?
Just getting the team together and on the field. I mean, this is why you're in the profession for 40 years as a coach, is you love coming to training. And so, you know, the drive to and from every day is part of the adventure as well. You see new sights that you want to eventually explore, and you know, getting downtown to the front office where we can, you know, look at the restaurants and the shops and things like that. It's a lot to offer in this city, and very exciting place to be.
Thank you for your time, Coach.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, next up is an interview with Richard Dixon. Richard Dixon comes to us from Jamaica, as well as the previous 5 years in USL Championship. He will bring a lot to the table to help anchor our defense. Here's what he had to say.
Here at practice with Chattanooga Red Wolves defender Richard Dixon. Richard, what were your impressions of the first chance getting to go out on Wednesday against Birmingham?
It was a good test for us. Birmingham, you know, a new team just like we are. Championship team, so they've put together a good squad. They've been in preseason now for, you know, over 3 weeks. So it was good, you know, to see a team like that that's, you know, prepared and ready to go. We're a bit not behind, you know. We have a bit of a different season, so we've been at it for 10 days at the test, you know. So it was good, you know. They were a good team, and we, you know, we got to see a lot of things, you know, things we do well, things we do poorly, and things we need to work on. So that was a brilliant test for us, and now we just, you know, take that game and take that result, and we keep building and move forward from there.
What are the important keys you took away from the game that you guys are working at going into Saturday's match?
There's a lot to take away, you know. There's you know, just different things we need to work on, you know, movement. We definitely need to get a bit fitter, you know. Only 10 days into preseason, you don't expect to be ready for a season yet. So definitely need to work on some fitness, some movement, you know, and then still trying to figure out, you know, tendencies of different guys and stuff like that, given that we haven't opened it up much on a big field.
Right. Mm-hmm. So are you guys fit enough for the 5K coming up Saturday?
I would like to think so, but I don't think we're allowed to participate, unfortunately. Okay. But we'll be there, though. We'll be there cheering everybody on and, you know, wishing everybody the best.
Excellent. What's the excitement level around the team for getting to open up against Atlanta United 2 here at David Stanton Field?
Oh, yeah, we're buzzing. You know, it would be next Saturday at game day, we'll be at a good spot, you know, 3 weeks in, and it should be a good test. By then, you know, we should be, you know, fit enough. We should be ready to go, and it would be a good test at home, you know, on our home field in front of our fans. Hopefully, you know, we get a bunch of people out here to you know, watch us play first game on David Stanton Field. So we're looking forward to it.
What's been your favorite part about being in Chattanooga so far?
I would say a little bit of everything. I haven't been able to get out much, but the few times I've been out, you know, I've been to some really, I've had some really good food here. So food is good. The hospitality, you know, good people so far. So I'm looking forward for the weather to get a little bit better so I can get out a bit more, experience a bit more of Chattanooga.
We've got lots of great outdoor places to sit on a porch and enjoy.
I'm looking forward to that.
There's a Jamaican restaurant down the street. Have you had a chance to check that out?
I went once to check it out. I think I went at a bad time, so I'll have to go again about lunchtime. But yeah, I've heard really great things, so I'm looking forward to go check it out for lunch one of these days. Mama right. Bees.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Our last interview is with Eamon Zayed. He hails from Dublin, Ireland, but has also played internationally for Libya as well as the under-21s for Ireland. He's spent the past 3 years in the USL Championship playing for both the Charlotte Independents and Indy 11, and he will be up front trying to finish those goals for us. And here's that interview.
Here with player Eamon Zayed, first goal scorer in Chattanooga Red Wolves history. How does that feel?
It feels great. Yeah, it feels great. You know, it's a little bit of history right there to be the first goal scorer. So I'm obviously delighted with the goal. You know, and it was a first game for Chattanooga Red Wolves. Obviously the results didn't go as planned, but it was our first game, and there was a lot of positives to take out of the game.
So disappointed with the result, but what were the main keys that you guys took from having a strong second half, coming back in the game from being down two goals?
Yeah, I think, you know, the first half was not so great. You know, it was our first game together as a group, so that was to be expected. But you know, the positive was that we came back in the second half, got the goal, chased the equaliser, and to be honest, I thought we were going to get the equaliser because we created a couple of chances, a couple of half chances, and some good situations. But I think the third goal from them kind of killed it off. And again, it was our first game, so fitness levels will improve. And but I think there was a lot of positives to take from it.
What was the mood on the bus ride back from Birmingham?
Look, this is a group that want to win. You know, individually, people have said it that they want to win. And as a group, that's going to be our mentality. We're not going to, regardless of if it's a friendly or if it's just a training game, guys are not going to be happy if they lose. So the ride home was, it was quiet. You know, obviously after the result. But you know, the next day we regrouped, we chatted about the game, and we have to take things into perspective that it was only our first game as a group, yeah, we have a good few games to come in the off season that we'll work on those things that we need to improve on.
So you got the goal on an assist from Richard Dixon. What was the goal celebration?
It wasn't much of a celebration. I love a celebration, and I'll have a few in store this season. But it was kind of I know what it was. I remember now. Yeah, it was 2-0 down. Got that goal back. It was just kind of get the ball back of the net and let's run to the halfway line and try and get that equaliser. Because as I said, we're a group that want to win, and we wanted to get that equaliser. And don't worry about that. I'll have some celebrations in store for the season to come.
Excellent. What's been your favorite part about being in Chattanooga so far?
I think just getting to know the people in and around the city. I have to say, obviously the lads in the team, they're all good guys, and the staff. The front office in Chattanooga Red Wolves is it's really, really nice. One of the nicest front office staffs I've ever met. More than willing to help whenever they can. So that's a major positive. But then again, anyone that I've just kind of met around the city, they're obviously with my accent. The first thing they ask is, where are you from and what are you doing here? And, when I tell them that, I'm here to play soccer for the, Chattanooga Red Wolves, it's just a lot of positivity around the city, and they can't wait for the games to get going, and they're more than willing to help and chat to you and be friendly to you. I think that's the major positive so far.
Awesome. Thank you for your time.
Cheers. Thank you.
All right. Well, that is the third and final interview that Alex got for us this past Friday after practice. Some really exciting things in there, reasons to be excited about the Red Wolves in the season ahead. That's going to end it for part one for us. We wanted to really focus on those interviews for the first part. When we come back in part two, expect some more information about the Red Wolves, as well as some information about the Greater U.S. Soccer, U.S. Open Cup, NISA, the new third division that has recently gotten sanctioning from the U.S. Soccer Federation, as well as things that are going around across the world that pertains to soccer. Come on back and listen to us. So welcome back. This is part two of the very first episode of Soccer Chat. If you didn't get a chance to listen to part one, I definitely advise you to go back and listen to some great interviews in there. Here in part two, we're going to talk a little bit about what to expect this upcoming weekend from the Red Wolves as we face Atlanta United 2, and some of the things that we expect to see from the team as well as from the fans going into that. Have you heard much?
So Coach Hankinson says in the interview that he is not expecting major changes to the lineup. So I think he's really going to try to give these guys another game to get their legs under them. I think one of the really important things, what's going to make this game very exciting, the feeling I got around the team when we were talking to them after practice, is that they have a really bad taste in their mouth. These are really competitive guys. And even though the game against Birmingham was a friendly, they really feel like they let a game get away, one that they could have competed in and played close. And so I think they're going to try to take it to Atlanta. They're going to come out really firing. Coach Hankinson talks a lot about immediate chase when you lose the ball. I believe his strategy is going to really be a high press team to try to win the ball back early. They're not going to sink in and absorb pressure. They're going to try to win the ball back, and when they get the ball back, they talk a lot about how they can beat the line of pressure from the other team. So they're looking to get on the break and put them on their back heel and really get attacking the goal. So I think it's going to lead to some really exciting soccer. It could be high risk, high reward.
Yeah.
If the defense is not going to be well organized, or if they play a little loose, then they could find themselves getting beat. But they're really going to look to press and attack, win the ball back, and get some goals. So that's going to lead to excitement for fans. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that does sound exciting. I mean, I can't. It's the Jose Mourinho style that we're avoiding, which makes me so happy, because that basically park the bus, hope for an outlet, win 1-0, be happy with that attitude. Just it's not necessarily bad soccer. It's just boring soccer, and so the fact that his style seems to be, or at this point seems to be, like he's leaning more towards be aggressive, look for your opportunities, really press them. That's exciting to me because that's fun to watch. It's also can be heartbreaking to watch because if you're taking a lot of risk, like you kind of mentioned the risk reward, if your back line's not stout, yeah, you can give up a lot of simple goals if you make some misplays. I think also you talk about how strong, you know, that if you look at the team, how strong he's built that middle, there's a reason for that. The middle's where we can lose it in that type of style. And so it's got a lot's going to fall on that, on the defensive mid that's dropping. If I remember correctly, it was a 4-3-3, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So we'd be looking at, you know, it's going to be really, really imperative that, you know, it doesn't become a 4-6 where we become flat, where all the three midfielders are pressing forward and we lose the back because then you're in trouble. But yeah, that's exciting to hear. I look forward to seeing that. I'm really looking forward to Saturday. It'll be my first chance really to get out there and see him. I haven't had a day off from work to be able to go out and watch any practices or anything like that. So this will be my first, you know, eyes on the team other than what I've seen through YouTube videos where they're on separate teams. And as we all know, the best player in the world can end up on some teams and just disappear. So it all depends on how they work together. Which, you know, we're only 2 weeks in. So what they're doing now and what they do on Saturday won't necessarily be what they're doing, you know, what is it, roughly 42 days, 41 days, somewhere like that from now. So a lot of growth can happen on that team chemistry, but I'm still very much looking forward to it.
I think something to watch for on Saturday is they've built the team with a lot of depth on defense. They've still continuing to add some players. Amigri Pineda, who they signed from Orange County SC. I don't know if we'll see him in the starting lineup, but I would look to see him be an early substitution in the second half, a chance to get a lot of run. I think he's going to bring a level of offense, some attacking to that midfield that's going to help.
Excellent. All right, well, let's switch it up a little bit. We've talked about the Red Wolves really for about 20, 25 minutes, somewhere in there right now. I'm not 100% sure. I'm probably way off on that. But that's all we've talked about so far. And there's more to what's going on in soccer, especially right now this last week. The Soccer Federation had their meetings, and they announced a few things. The biggest announcement really to come out that was a true announcement was probably that NISA has gotten its sanctioning approved. It's, you know, it's like most sanctioning first year, it's provisional. But the fact that they even got that's a big step. I think a lot of us thought NISA was just going to kind of slowly disappear. If you're not aware of what NISA is, it's a new league similar to League One that had originally actually been started by Peter Wilt, who is now the head of the Forward Madison initiative for League One. He started it, and in fact, their first big announced team was right here from Chattanooga. It was Chattanooga FC. Ultimately, Chattanooga FC withdrew for varying reasons that they've given, and I think a lot of those reasons were valid. It didn't seem like what had been promised was necessarily coming through. And it turns out, you know, that NISA League is set to hopefully start in the fall, which will be the same time the Founders Cup for MPSL will be starting, which is not a sanctioned league, and not even a league at all. It's really just a tournament that they're having in the fall with a league to follow. But what are your views on NISA? How do you think that affects League One and ultimately soccer as a whole for the U.S.?
I think with the season not starting till August, that's going to be right around crunch time for League One. You know, August into September is when it's really kind of the stretch drive for those teams. So I think there's going to be a lot of attention. I don't know how much is going to get pulled away for NISA. I know a lot of people would love to have a soccer schedule that matches the European system where they start in August, they go through the winter and they end. And I think in America, it's just too tricky to do. There are too many well-established sports that are running in the wintertime that start in the fall that it's hard to compete with. There's going to be baseball playoffs. There's going to be college football and pro football kicking off. That league is going to go through the winter where you're going to end up running into hockey and basketball running at the same time. I guess you're looking at an ending around March. Isn't there a thing that's pretty popular in March. It gets kind of chaotic or something like that. And so I'm wondering
it's madness,
about that
the
strategy.
Things that happen in,
it's madness. It is. Yeah. I've heard that it's madness. And so I'm wondering if that's really a wise strategy of a time to really start the league.
What I find interesting is some of the announced places that that are involved. So you have San Diego is announced, and in the sanctioning itself, there was a team in Rhode Island, Daytona Beach, Los Angeles. Apparently, there's also teams. The Atlanta team is actually playing in Stonecrest, Georgia at Sports City Soccer Complex. There's a team in Charlotte and Connecticut. So those are pretty big towns that they're having those teams in, which I find interesting. It's a very different strategy than League One is deploying, where the only real big towns are the two teams, right? You've got Toronto, too. It's a pretty darn big town up in Canada, but it's still their two teams. So I thought that was interesting that they're going to be competing against like especially Atlanta, they're going to be competing for fans during the fall when, in honesty, MLS is still in full force, right? That's and Atlanta United will very much more than likely, based off the squad that they have coming back and the players that they have lost or added seem to be kind of equal. They're going to be very much in the battle. I don't see them pulling a lot of fans there.
I've heard from some that Atlanta United is pretty popular in the city.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of – it just seems risky. Like, I just – I wish them the best. I like the fact that they have chosen to not do any sort of similar – so the USL has areas or markets that you basically buy the rights to and no other competitor can be in there. Nice is not doing that, which I think is excellent. I think that's what will get us further towards the possibility of having some sort of movement between these leagues that everyone seems to want, except for maybe the fans at the very top. But the lower
or the owners,
teams. Yeah. But see, I think even some of the owners, if it was done right, see the value in it. It's the ones that are hesitant to believe that there's going to be done right, because the fact is nobody's going to a game in New England when they're out of it, right? The Revolution's not pulling in a bunch of fans when they're out of it. And maybe it's something that brings in fans that they're fighting for their lives. Who knows? There's arguments on that. It's not really worth, honestly, I think there's probably multiple podcasts that all they talk about is promotion relegation. That's not what we're going to do here. But the idea that you've set yourself up that could be a possibility, I think, is excellent. And they don't have any sort of expansion fee that they've talked about, at least at this point. They claim there's no territory or expansion rights, which in any sort of professional league standard sanctioned league has not happened before. So that's interesting to follow and see how that affects them. I mean, if anything, it's going to give them more working capital on the front end. So I don't know. It'll be something interesting to watch and see how it goes. I do agree with you that they're going to have more than just the fact that they have a team in Philly that's going to be playing in the winter. And I've been to Philly in the winter. It's not warm. But at the same time, they're not dealing with a team in Miami when it's 100 degrees and humidity is 100%. So,
which is basically all the time I hear.
Yeah, Miami's a beautiful town to visit. Anyways, so all that to say, I think Nisa will be fun to watch. I'm not rooting against them by any stretch, but I am doubtful that is a method that'll work. But the other part of me is wondering, USL has a desire to go to 40 teams in championship. That's what they've stated. 40 teams in League One. That's what they've stated. Nisa is obviously not going to want to stay at 8 teams. When do we reach the point where we run out of players that are of high enough quality that they're going to bring in fans to watch? You know what I mean? Like at this point, MLS doesn't seem to be stopping their expansion. USL's already said they're not stopping theirs. You're talking of close to 50 more teams just in those three leagues. And then you're going to add Nice on top of that. I'm starting to wonder where the players for MPSL and MPSL Pro are going to be coming from, right? So,
I think you have a good point on that. I really, whenever I see all of the, the plans for MLS expansion, I get a twitch in my eye because I feel like they're probably kind of overexpanded to a point where some of the players that are playing significant minutes for MLS clubs really are most likely guys who would be better served in a USL championship type league rather than at that top level. I think player development wise, that might be a wiser choice.
So then the question becomes, are we able to pull more players from overseas? Like if you look at the Red Bulls, they pulled a number of players that were playing, in Ireland. We had a couple players. We had a player that was last year played at Mo Bay in Jamaica. So are we going to pull in more international players that say, hey, I'm willing to go over back to the U.S. A lot of these guys play college ball in the U.S. For an opportunity to play pro in the U.S. If for nothing else, then, you know, there is attractiveness to being here and to being in the United States. I mean, there's a reason why people like to be here. It's not just for the football or soccer or whatever you want to call it. I think that's the only place we can really grow. I don't think, as much as the American in me really wants to say where we have all these academy players that had an opportunity, I don't think if that was the case that we would have already seen so many of the League One teams pulling players from overseas as we've seen. And if you're doubling the size of those three divisions, you're just going to see more and more of that, which I don't know if it's a bad thing. As long as that means that when we do bring in those young players, they're playing against talent that's going to bring them to the next level. So I'm thinking of the player in Dallas that was 15 when he signed his first contract. I think there was someone that just announced for one of the championship teams who was 15, and he signed his first pro contract for them. So, you know, is that going to be good for them? Or are we going to see that actually helps with development because there's these teams? So a lot of really interesting things could come out of that. In comical news related to Division 3, I do want to bring this up. I was seeing it run across my wire earlier today. Did you see these CRAC, I don't think I'm pronouncing that correct, but the Italian third division had a team that its senior players refused to play because they weren't getting paid. So they brought a bunch of youth players and they could only scavenger up 7 of them. So they lost.
Bunch of spoiled millennials.
Oh, I don't want to play soccer unless I get paid money.
I'm just going to move on past that and focus on the score. At halftime, 16-0. Final score 20-0. So I had to look up, like, okay, how bad was this team prior to that? So I looked it up. They're in last place. They're well on their way to becoming part of Serie D. Their goal differential prior to this game was only negative 21. They are now negative 41. They doubled how behind they are on goal differential in one game. That's pretty impressive.
So I had a U7 game where I gave up, I believe it was 11 goals in one half, and mentioned the fact to my grandpa at some kind of family function afterwards. And he said something along the lines of, boy, you guys should have shot that goalie. And I said, well, grandpa, I was that goalie.
Good to see your grandpa was paying attention. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other news, we could have bought that team over the summer. It cost $1. That's how much they sold for. So any of the people that try to tell you that, you know, that all these other lower division leagues in other countries are doing great, no, everybody struggles with lower division, whether or not they've got promotion or relegation or not. So that's a bit of a myth. I thought I'd throw that out there as well. Other thing that came out of that kind of leaked, was an official announcement out of the Soccer Federation meetings, was the leak that it appears the Open Cup is going to be available on a major streaming platform. The rumor mill is ESPN+. What do you think about that?
I am very excited to get signed up for the free trial of the ESPN+. There's been a lot going on, so I haven't had a chance to really sign up and try and get that. I think one thing that's going to build a lot of excitement for lower division soccer is having this ability for people to watch these teams in these early rounds of the Open Cup.
Yeah.
Pick a favorite and watch them go through, you know, Chattanooga Red Wolves play against the Charleston Battery and happen to pull off an upset, and we get to watch them in the next round against, you know, maybe an upper level USL club, or getting to actually play against an MLS team. And they might not get further than that, but I think you can get, you know, you can see those, you know, the Cinderella stories get covered. And the fact that you're actually going to get to see it happen and not just, you know, see it scrolling across the bottom of a screen, or, you know, have to actively go look for it on the Open Cup website is going to be a really good thing for lower division soccer.
Yeah, I think the other side of it is, and I think this is something that a lot of people have been upset on, at least the soccer world on Twitter, is that they feel like less and less amateur teams are getting to be involved in that U.S. Open Cup. But you know, if you add into the other side of it, there's a significantly more pro teams than there was, and it's going to continue to grow. I mean, you're going to be looking at just between, you know, just the four pro sanctioned leagues, if you include NISA in that, you know, you're going to be looking close to 70 some odd pro teams now. And once expansion's done, in over 100, I do think they have to keep it open for the amateur teams for what you just talked about. Especially those amateur teams that have ambition to bring pro soccer to their community. I think anyone who, it's the U.S., you have to admit that to bring pro soccer to your community, it means you're typically buying into a league unless it's NISA, right? And so it gives them a chance to show, hey, here's our fan base, here's our opportunity, and maybe attract that investor if they don't have that investor to be able to qualify for the PSLs, the Professional League Standards, PLSs, sorry, Professional League Standards. But also, just, you know, if you're a fan of a team that averages 500 fans and you knock off a Goliath, and I put quotation marks about that because you're typically, your Goliath is a USL championship team, right? You play Indy 11 and you shock the world and you beat them as an amateur team. That's something to hang your hat on that, you know, I think people lose sight of. I mean, I think if, you know, using American standards, if a independent minor league baseball team got to play in some sort of tournament where they got to knock out a AAA team for the Red Sox, they're going to be talking about that for the rest of their lives, all those fans of that independent baseball team, right? It's the same thing with soccer. Like, if you're a fan of an independent soccer team that plays in, you know, UPSL or MPSL, and you knock off a USL championship team, that's something that you can hang your hat on for years. So there's a lot of value in that. And then being able to see it live and being able to watch the replay, that would be huge. So I really hope it does end up being ESPN Plus. I have personally had the free preview, as well as I'm now a subscriber. And I truly enjoy it. I mean, there's just a lot of soccer there. Like, if you're a fan of soccer, you can watch the FA Cup, you can watch Serie A. There's just a lot there. And so if the more you add the USL MLS games, you hopefully USL League One, the Open Cup, it becomes a soccer fan's haven. So I'm really rooting for that to be the case.
You know, there is a note, as you know, as you talk about the FA Cup being shown on ESPN Plus, a lot of the, you know, very low semi-pro divisions, you know, you're talking about the I don't know, six through 10 levels of the English soccer pyramid. You know, those teams knock each other out to a point where they get to the professionals. You know, it's not another situation where everyone basically starts in the same round and we try to fight it out. You know, you've got to really go on a run to qualify and get a chance to play against those Goliaths.
Yeah.
Like Liverpool and Manchester United and Tottenham.
Oh, you suck. Yeah, I caught that. I'm just saying, just because we lost to a team in the Europa League that hadn't played in 2 months doesn't mean that we're not a Goliath. I'm so mad about that still. I don't know if, did you hear about that or see that? So
no, I only follow good teams.
Oh, Jesus, keeping it. Just turn the knife. Yeah, so I guess this is the making an arse of myself part of the podcast that I just can't resist. But we lost to a team that hadn't played in 2 months. That last year in the Europa League, we beat them 6-0 and 4-2. We lost 1-0, and it wasn't that close. Like, it was ugly. And to add insult to injury, Lacazette, who is one of our top scorers, got a red card in the 85th minute, so he won't be playing in the next game either. So just classic. I mean, yeah, it's just...
Well, that's entertaining.
Yeah, entertaining is a good way to put it. And then our coach afterwards was like, yeah, I feel like we're going to do better next game. It's like, you think? You set the bar basically underground, so if you can't jump over it, I feel like we've got a major problem. So anyways... That's the end of that segment. I won't focus too much on Arsenal this time. Yeah.
Something else I wanted to bring up in the wide world of soccer. Last month in January, the U.S. men's national team January camp, you know, our long national struggle with men's national team soccer is over. I wanted to get your thoughts on the start of the Greg Berhalter era.
So I'm still hesitant. So I felt that it went, considering it wasn't even really our best players, right? So it wasn't even an international break where everybody's showing up. So we were still a lot of players that were playing that would not typically be playing in the Gold Cup or obviously in the World Cup, but there were a lot of those players that if that was
happening. Chiasi Zardes being one of your best players is kind of like the Atlanta traffic of soccer.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not as much of a hater on Zardes as some are, but yeah, if he's the best player on the field, that's a bad sign. I'll agree with you on that. And I think that's somewhat what they even talked about him being the veteran influence. I was like, no, let's not have him influencing. But
as long as he's not coaching first touches, that's
yeah. If you take this first touch, your goal is to get it at least 15 feet from where you're actually standing. That seems to be his goal. No. So the one thing I will say that I did enjoy was I like the attacking formation that he's implementing. I like, and the fact that, and this, I don't remember who it was exactly that was bringing it up, but the type of players that he was using in those various roles were almost plug and play, where like this is the shadow of a Pulisic that I'm going to put here, so he plays in the same manner, so I can see how this works. I thought that was really intelligent. I was impressed by the fact that instead of just building what he had, he built for what he was going to have and built his formation according to what he was going to have and tried to plug similar players in. That I'd read that somewhere and, you know, watched it in the second game and saw what he was what they were talking about on that. And then once you add more speed, I think you're going to see some of those through balls that you're seeing going across that if you have, if you have Way running in on those, it's a little bit better than, you know, a guy who legitimately wasn't even playing in USL Championship 2 years ago. Right. So, and that's not a knock on him. It's just, there's a reason why he was in just barely made the championship squad last year. And the player that's, Mark to replace him is playing first division overseas, right? There's a quality difference. So I think you'll know a lot more once we see them in, but I was pleasantly surprised, but I'm still waiting to see. I mean, it's not like he was the most impressive coach in MLS when he was in MLS. So that's what kind of makes me hesitate.
I, of course, too, am trying not to jump the gun. I was very pleasantly surprised with how the U.S. came out. I felt like there were lots of times in the Jurgen Klinsmann era, even in the days when everyone loved Jurgen Klinsmann and he was going to save U.S. soccer, where they would go out for a match against, Panama in a January camp when it's probably not even Panama's best players on the field. And they would just look so flat and lethargic. And, you're hoping that they go out and they take care of business, but instead they're, suffering a flurry of chances and the keeper's having to make a couple of crazy saves to keep it, or they give up the early goal. I was really impressed at how much the defense was very well organized. You did not see those, this lazy back pass got intercepted and now we're running, chasing the guy down, having to make big saves and those kind of things. And then also they were very aggressive. My favorite goal the entire month was I believe it was the third against Panama. They turned the ball over, but immediately Lima is there with a sliding tackle, wins the ball back, looks up and sees the U.S. player in space and sends it to him for the goal. Yeah. They would win that ball and they were looking to go forward. It wasn't the old Michael Bradley back pass and we're going to swing it around side to side for 20 minutes. It wasn't we turned the ball over and we're having to scramble and run backwards to play into a defensive shell.
No, and I think I agree with you on that. My only worry is, we were still playing other teams' B teams, right? And we weren't, and yes, it was our B team as well. I'm just holding off till I see A players versus A players before I make a determination. It's so hard to tell in that situation. I will say that one of the advantages of having the young team in there is some of those players, they're not stupid. They know, hey, I'm not the number one choice, right? There's a reason why I'm available to play in this game. And they're wanting to impress him, right?
Right.
And even Zardes was talking about the fact, you know, Zardes played for him, right, and played for him for a couple years, so he knows his style. But even he was saying, like, that there's a difference between the coming into a camp and when you play for him during the season. Like, he could see a difference in the way he was coaching, which made me feel better, because honestly, I don't think I want that coach that was, you know, losing his job in MLS, right? Like, that's not typically who you want to be leading your U.S. squad. So it'll be interesting to see. And I think that there was definitely a few players that caught my eye that shocked me on how not just their – not the goal scorers necessarily, but the positioning and the fact that they seem to always be in the right position. I'm thinking –
Yes.
I think that's really impressive. Like, that's the type of stuff that'll stay in the coach's mind. So it'll be interesting to see which one of those players from those January camp will be involved in the future camps, especially thinking, you know, towards the next big one, which is the Gold Cup, right? Isn't that the next big? Is that the next big thing for us? Or am I?
Yeah, crazy? they've got a window in March here. They have friendlies against Ecuador on March 21st, and a friendly against Chile March 26th. So they've got another window where they're going to probably have B team players again, because the European season will still be going. So that'll be another chance. Two things that I want to be wary of is, number one, how many times Adrian Healy says Chula Vista on ESPN. And the other really important thing is, at a certain point, I no longer want to hear Greg Berhalter talk about gathering data.
Yeah.
So, you know, these first two camps, maybe even as we're going through the Gold Cup.
And that's in, yeah, that's we're in July, gonna start, right? Or June.
That starts in June, mid-June.
Yeah.
You know, there is a certain part of gathering data, yes. But at a certain point, you have enough data. You may still be gathering it in the background, but you need to know what you're going to be doing with this.
Yeah.
And so if it's always comes down to, oh, we're just gathering data, you know, it sounds like the old Butch Jones brick by brick, like, okay, eventually there's enough bricks and you've built something. Yeah. What is it?
Yeah. Well, Butch Jones built a wall that kept Tennessee from winning, but let's not focus on that. I think part of the, though, is that we took forever to pick a freaking coach. Like, the reason you're gathering data is because you should have started gathering data 6 months ago, and it took us this long to name him. You know what I mean? So that's part of it as well. Like, I think we kind of shot ourselves in the foot. We had an opportunity to put a coach in place and really build that up early on. And instead, it's not like we set the world on fire with the hire. And you know, maybe he turns out to be the best hire ever, but I think most people agree this was not a home run. This is a single that you're hoping you can stretch, right?
Sure.
And so, I don't know. Part of me feels like that's just another knock on the quality of leadership we have with the Soccer Federation. So last thing I kind of want to bring up before we end this time is we have going to kind of bring it back to the Red Wolves, and then also going to bring up the Lady Red Wolves. We have two teams with the Red Wolves moniker that are considered our top level, right? We have the Lady Red Wolves and the Chattanooga Red Wolves. The Lady Red Wolves have recently started announcing some players, as well as some operations people. They're going to be coming up here in you know, the same time frame, the WPSL schedule, May, June, July, that area. One of the things that I found, we don't have a lot of turnout, unfortunately, for the women's game here in Chattanooga. Is there anything you think the Red Wolves or as a supporting groups could do to help bring out more fans to those women's games?
I think podcasts like Soccer Chat are going to be instrumental in letting people know what's going on. I'll be honest, as someone who never attended a Lady CFC game, I didn't really know too much of what was going on. And so I think really it's just making sure that we're covering it, that we're talking about them, that we're, you know, hopefully trying to make enough of an interest that that the free press is also interested in covering what happens with those matches.
Yeah.
I think that's the important thing is just getting word out and talking about them before it happens. I don't remember ever really having a heads up on when the games were. You know, I'm not a father of girls, and yeah. So that maybe also is something that hurts me of, you know, not necessarily worried about being going to the game, but we'll definitely be checking a couple of them out this year.
Well, see, the two things that I think hurt the CFC women's team was they used to allow, if you were a season ticket holder, you could go to the women's games with that same season ticket jersey. So when they changed that, we saw a significant decrease in not, I wouldn't say interest, but in people coming into the stands, because then it just became like this extra game you could go to and some people would show up. It was the last couple of years where they didn't do that. It I think it hurt a little bit because they hadn't yet built up that interest. But yeah, there's some things that can definitely be done. Like you said, I've got daughters, so that's part of it. Definitely, I'm not going to lie, that I keep an eye out for it because, you know, my oldest has a desire to become a goalkeeper. And she had this really awesome opportunity when we went to the reveal for the jerseys that one of the people there pointed out who the goalkeeper for the women was going to be. She went up and talked to her. The girl could not have been, her name was Danielle. She could not have been nicer about, like, Jordan having interest. She told her, gave her some tips, told her she ever wanted to work out over the summer, she'd be more than happy to work with her, which she didn't have to do any of that. And it's just really nice to see, like, the effort being made. And the fact that the Red Bulls had them there, that the women were up there for the jersey reveal as well. It wasn't just a couple guys coming out in the goalkeeper jersey. It was, we had one, you know, with the goalkeeper for the men, and then we had a female and a male representative in both jerseys, which I thought was important because it showed that both teams are important to our owners. I love the fact that the owner of the women's team, Gretchen, has been heavily involved in our community for a long period of time. She was a significant part of the CFC women's team. And so it's exciting to see what they're doing. And I just really want to make sure as a group, and I'm kind of a side part of the Alpha supporters group. I'm not part of their leadership by any stretch of the imagination, but I've been, you know, involved from pretty much the beginning with that as well. And I can say with confidence, like, that's a focus that they talk about. Like, how can we be involved with the women's game as well, which is really exciting because I think both deserve to be supported. And so that's kind of why I brought that up just a little bit. Just, you know, hey, it's episode one. I want to make sure everyone knows, hey, we're not just covering the men's team. We're going to talk about the women's team. We look forward to when that ramps up, especially they have a shorter season, like I said, May, June, July versus the longer men's season. But it'll be fun when it gets here.
If I'm not mistaken, it also is a much more local schedule. So, you know, if the Red Wolves are a little farther on an out-of-town trip that you can't make, you're going to be seeing the Lady Red Wolves playing games in Nashville, in Memphis. Is there somewhere in North Alabama? Is it Huntsville or is it down in Birmingham? You know, there's places where we can also, you know, we can get together as a group, we can travel, we could try to show that support for the ladies team. That's a little easier than we're going to go to Toronto or Madison, as much as I want to try to get to a game in Madison at some point.
All right. So you bring up Madison, and that makes me think of something else I do want to talk about before we get over to the podcast. And that's Ford Madison, their Twitter account. You and I are pretty heavily involved on Twitter, and you got a discussion with a member of the League One Fun podcast about Madison and their impact of their Flamingo focus Twitter. And honestly, their Twitter account and their social media in general is on point. But some people seem to think that that's why they're going to be good or they're worthy of watching. And you've taken the standpoint of, you know, you could care less about how good their social media is. You're more focused on what's happening on the field. You know, what's your real view when it comes to Ford Madison?
I believe that they're doing a good job as a team.
Like building, like, the actual team?
They have a good team. And honestly, you know, like, their social media is good. It's on point. It gets people excited. I see, like, pictures of that stadium that they're converting to their soccer stadium. It looks awesome.
Yeah.
And I've heard that Madison is an awesome place to visit. Like, it'd be fun to go up there for a weekend and be able to go watch a game and do stuff around Madison. But, well, yeah, it's just like, oh, it's a funny flamingo, and they're amazing, and they're going to be the best team ever. It's like, if they suck, everyone's just going to be like, yeah, there was a flamingo once. It was funny.
Yeah, and I don't think they have to worry about that because they have Peter Wilt running that organization.
Yeah.
And
they also have a defender that refers to himself in the third person as Turbo, apparently.
Well, If your nickname's Turbo, let's be honest. If my nickname was Turbo, I would be talking about like, "Hey, Turbo likes this."
Like, considering your finish in the 5K, you're definitely never going to be nicknamed Turbo. All
right. So knowing that, all right. 4 years ago, when I decided to run my first half marathon, I play in a weekly poker game with a bunch of guys I went to college with, and they legitimately took bets on like when I would finish. And none of them were within 30 minutes of it. That's how they all were like, yeah, it's going to take you over 3 minutes, three and a half hours, four and a half hours. I was like, I can do it in under 2.5 hours. Like, no, you can't. I was like, I'm telling you, I can't. It's not that much. It's like, I've done the math on this. This is not that bad. It's like, and they're like, no, you can't do it. I got in there at 2:29 and some seconds. So screw them. And I was only because I had like a 60-year-old woman that was pushing me when I was out running, and she happened to be like next to me, and she's like, how are you doing? I was like, I just got to make under 2:30. She's like, stick with me, I can get you under 2:30. And so sure enough, she paced me. She said her goal was 2:15, but when she heard what the bet was, she said she was going to help me to finish line. So yeah,
nice.
I am excruciatingly slow, and I have no problem admitting that. even in shape, I'm excruciatingly slow. And so when I think I'm at 295 right now, which by the way is 30 pounds down from where I was a month and a half ago, but that's still huge.
Attaboy.
Yeah. Anyways. So last thing, I said last thing earlier, but I'm going to say last thing again. One of the things people have been bringing up in some other shows that are League One focused is who do we think is going to be the biggest challenger? We talked about Ford Madison here for just a second about the quality that Peter Wilt's going to put together. We've seen some quality roster, I think, coming out of Greenville. I think Greenville's has shown some roster ads that have been pretty good. I think it's Ford and us that are kind of 1-2 on quality of roster. Do you see someone else that I'm missing? I mean, Richmond Kickers has basically kept most of their roster from before.
Yeah, that's the one that I would mention. I think it definitely is the Chattanooga Red Wolves. I think Forward Madison has put together some pretty talented players. And then I think Richmond Kickers coming down from USL Championship, but being able to keep a lot of the talent that they had on the team. I know they were bottom of the table, but here again, they're coming down to League One from Championship. So I think it's going to be a competitive squad.
And they've got people keep talking about Forward Madison's supporter group. The Richmond Kickers have a strong supporter group. I mean, it's 20 plus years of supporting that team. It's not like they're new even to Championship. They've been around for a long time, and they've got a pretty stout supporters group themselves. So, you know, even in addition to the quality of the play on the field, they're going to have a good atmosphere, I think, for people to come visit. You talked about going to visit earlier. You talked a little bit about going to visit like Madison, Wisconsin, or something like that, being a fun trip. You know, stadiums that I'm interested in going to visit, I want to go down and see that Tormenta Stadium that they're building next year. I think that's going to be excellent.
Yeah,
I really like it. You said I like the Wisconsin, the conversion that they've done to their stadium. I think it's excellent. And then I think the atmosphere in Richmond is going to be strong too, because that supporters group has done a good job. I mean, I think they've proven themselves for years. Well, you know what? That brings us to the end of the first podcast, the first official podcast. I think hopefully you guys enjoyed it, and want to once again thank Beautiful Game Network for letting us join them and that other groups that are out there, as well as all of you for listening. And if you ever have any questions for us, you know, hit us up on Twitter. We'd be more than happy to answer your questions.
On Twitter, at SoccerChat with 2 T's. Or you can email us SoccerChat with 2 T's at gmail.com. Yeah, that was a hot pile of garbage.
Yeah, but I can recut that.
The only reason I said that was just to give you more outtakes to put at the end of episodes. Here, Google Drive, Google Drive, Google Drive. See, this could be what we put at the end after the outro music. Here, Google Drive, Google Drive, Google Drive.
Editing this took way longer than it should have. Man, I hope you guys enjoyed it.